Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis. The presidential election isn't the only stress point in many households. It's college application season. And if, like most college students, you're going to need some financial help to get there, you'll want to know about some big changes to the dreadfully acronymed FAFSA. We have everything you'll need to know, and we'll also talk with the superintendent of the U.S. Naval Academy. It's a collegiate edition of Hearsay, right after this news from NPR. Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and boy, we're glad to have you with us today. It's a gorgeous day outside. Hope you had a little chance to get out and enjoy that. Maybe you will before the end of the day. Who knows? This is sort of what we have in mind when we think about fall in Hampton Roads. So we are so happy you're with us today. A little bit later in the program, Mal Vincent will be with us, and he will be talking about Richmond-born film legend Shirley MacLaine and her last visit to Chrysler Hall and why she apparently left on a sour note. So there's something to look forward to a little bit later. We'll also be talking with Vice Admiral Ted Carter. He's the superintendent of the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis. This is pretty amazing. They had a big football victory and gave the midshipmen a day off, which apparently just has not happened in a very, very, very long time. So we'll talk with him a little bit later. He's visiting here in town. And we also want to talk with you today about the college application process, because a lot of you are getting ready to get underway with that. In a lot of your households, Thanksgiving and Christmas will be filled with nothing but that. So there you go. And we're wondering what questions you may have about that process, especially if you are in that category of something on the order of 71% of students who will need financial help to go to college. Maybe you are the parent of such a student. Maybe you are the student themselves. If so, we want to hear from you today at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. We have a team of folks who know just about everything there is to know about this whole process, and chief among them are Bonnie Sutton and Cheryl Jones, both with the Access College Foundation. Bonnie is the president and CEO, and Cheryl is the program director. Bonnie, nice to have you today.
Thank you.
And Cheryl, nice to have you with us as well. So we called it the dreadfully acronymed FAFSA, which stands for
Free Application for Federal Student Aid.
And this is the key to the whole process, is it not? I mean, you have to have a FAFSA if you want to get a loan.
That's correct.
And does this, if you wanted to get a merit scholarship, merit meaning you've been a good student, somebody says you've done a great job?
Well, it depends. And also, let's not just talk about loans, because the FAFSA is also your application for five different federal programs, Pell Grant among the lead of those, which are for low to moderate income families.
So, and in a Pell Grant, you don't have to pay it back?
Not paying that back, not paying SEOG, which is also part of
What's SEOG?
Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grant, also a federal grant, no payback, gift aid, and also application for college work study. So if you even think you're going to work in college, you've got, it's the same form. There are five different programs.
You have to fill out the FAFSA in order to work?
Absolutely.
Because federal, if you're working through the college.
Most college work study is federally based. In other words, the college is getting a match from federal funds, and so they are going to require this as well.
So this FAFSA is the doorway to everything. And it is a delightful process, is it not, Cheryl? Isn't it one of the most delightful processes that has ever...
The most awesome.
It is. Yep. Right? And that's sarcasm, my friends. That's what sarcasm is called. It's a challenging process.
Very challenging.
Yeah.
Especially for parents that have never been able to go to college themselves.
Sure.
They want to make their students' life much better and easier path to their journey.
Yeah.
And I think that for us, being in the school, helping those parents navigate through the process is the most awesome thing that we can do for our students.
The Access College Foundation was started by philanthropists here in Hampton Roads, Josh Darden and Frank Batten, and they decided that there were a number of young people in the community who could almost get to college financially, but not quite. And so it provides last dollar funding if you've done everything else there is to do and you meet certain income requirements.
Absolutely.
But the amazing thing, and the really, I think, unique thing in terms of the whole country, is that Access counselors are in how many schools? All the schools.
Right. We're in 30 public high schools now, which means every high school in Norfolk, Portsmouth, Chesapeake, Virginia Beach, Suffolk, and then new to us last year, Northampton County on the Eastern Shore. And the beauty of the FAFSA and Access is that there are many academically talented students who just don't have the funds to go to college. So this is really not only bridging the gap with our last dollar award, but so let's say we give about $1 million in scholarships every year, where our Access advisors in those schools are leveraging $50 million in federal aid and other things, largely because of this FAFSA.
Right.
And with the moved up deadline where you used to not start it till January 1, so erase that from your brain because that's no longer, we actually started filing October 1st.
So 12 minutes past the hour, this is one of the big changes to FAFSA. What we want to do is hear from you today with your questions about this process. But first, we really want to lay that groundwork for you that if you anticipate gift aid, if you anticipate loans, if you anticipate work study, the FAFSA is the gateway. You can't get there without it. It is not a pleasant process particularly, but there are some aspects of it that are a little bit easier this year and may increase your chance of being more favorably represented in that process. So we want to hear what your experience with FAFSA is and has been. 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. So you mentioned the deadline is moved up. It used to be January.
Right. Before
and
you
now,
could start it.
Before
now,
you can even start.
You need to start it. In fact, we're already filing. Already within the first 5 days of FAFSA filing, our advisors had filed, I believe, 350 FAFSAs.
And what is the advantage of filing early?
Well, priority filing deadlines among the colleges, because in Virginia, you have to remember, this is not just a federal form. The Virginia colleges get money from the state and then from the Commonwealth of Virginia, and then they determine, based on when you file this federal form, who gets state aid.
Oh.
So for Virginia students, it makes a huge difference in what state aid you're going to get. And the earlier you file, the more money is still available.
And a key to that process is your tax return.
Absolutely. But fortunately, and Cheryl can give some other details or for our callers or whatever, but we call Cheryl the college whisperer because she's just knows how to get the most aid for our students. And she has trained our advisors in all the nuances of the new process this year. But you used to have to wait to file your taxes. So if you were going to be filing in January, you were going to be filing
on. You had to wait to file it and then
do
your
FAFSA.
Right.
And you had to, so you had to estimate taxes, so forth and so on. Now you're doing it on last year's.
Yeah.
So 2015 taxes, which are already done because we're in 2016. So the prior year of that FAFSA form or the tax return is what you're using. You've already got that done. It's already ready. So you're ready to roll and hit the ground running and go ahead and get that FAFSA filed.
It's a great point. We're at 14 minutes past the hour. It's 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. So one of the things that you want to make sure that you do is file early. If you were thinking you had to wait till January, not so. You can start it right now. This is a great time to do that. I wonder, Cheryl, as you think about the mistake, because I know you work and you supervise all of these counselors in the schools. What do you think are the key knowledge points that people need to have when they fill out the FAFSA? Where do people make the mistakes that sort of put them down in the ranking?
The most common mistake would be your Social Security number.
Really?
Yes. Most parents, when they are filling out that form, they actually put their Social Security number where the student's Social Security number.
Oh,
so once that gets filed, it gets, rejected, and you need to either check your email to make sure that you are seeing if they are, emails have come out or, they
check
more than
junk
likely
file.
All the junk files and so forth. And 9 times out of 10, the parents will not realize, and the student will not realize until May or June.
Oh.
We did not get anything from our colleges. They've been accepted to college, but no award letter packaging their student. And then after coming to us and trying to troubleshoot, we find out that it had been rejected.
It was a social number. Wow. So when you fill out these applications, you are filling them out on behalf of the student
Absolutely.
Who is seeking the aid.
Absolutely.
And that's an important
yes.
point. This aid goes to the student.
Absolutely.
It certainly is decided based on the parents' income and whatever support they have right. and whatever income they have. But it is student aid.
Student right. aid.
Really important. Kimberly's on the line from Portsmouth. Hi, Kimberly. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. Go right ahead. What's your question?
Well, I didn't actually have a question. I wanted to speak to the process of the FAFSA.
Okay.
My son's a freshman. Yeah, I just literally deposited him up at VCU
uh-huh.
in August. And he just finished applying for next year's, and it was so much easier for him because, you know, of this new date. It's like we were ready for it.
Yeah.
We had really good help from the access of people, you know, to gave us a heads up.
Sure.
So we were prepared.
Excellent.
And because it was horribly intimidating for me. He's a first generation college
yes.
student. So the FAFSA yeah. Is intimidating, but he's already got it in there and he's ready to roll. And
fantastic.
It's just a peace of mind, you know, it's just,
sure.
So I encourage, you know, all the other parents to, you know, it's okay.
All right. Hey, Kimberly, a great call from Portsmouth today, and thank you so much. It's 17 minutes past the hour. I think Kimberly brings up such a good point about how intimidating because you have not done it before. So many college processes are for first generation students whose parents didn't go to college and grandparents didn't go to college.
Absolutely. That's one of the beauties of Access and having someone right there in the high school to guide you through the process, because this is all new. And even if it's a parent who did go to college, it was 30 years ago or whenever, you know, 20 years ago.
Are you trying to tell me things change?
Well, just a little bit. How about every year?
Yeah.
Yes. And so we're the ones, we take that on for you. We take that to stay abreast of everything that's new and all the processes and so forth. And so, you know, it provides you with an expert on a high school campus.
You know, this is interesting. And it may have been you all who shared this, but I thought it was a really powerful thing. This process of going to college and getting your money together and doing the college acceptance and the choice and all the rest of it is a very finite experience. I mean, it's expertise that you need for a limited period of mm-hmm. time. And then, you know, we all move on with our lives. Why
right.
would we be, you know, stuck in there unless we got somebody on the 8-year plan, which is a possibility. But, you know, but it's interesting because it's very intense, very rigorous, and very finite. Dana's on the line from Williamsburg. Hi, Dana. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have four kids, one in college and triplets who are filling out college applications right now. And
I just need to take a breath on that, Dana. I'm sorry. I just need to take a breath and have a sip of coffee on your behalf. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is like my sixth cup, so that's my life. So I guess the question is, how does the number of children you have in college or not yet in college, how does that affect your FAFSA results?
Well, I have some bad news for you. I do not think it's buy two, get one free. I do not think that is the case here.
Well, actually, Dana, although I did a silent screen in the studio and when you
yes.
made, you know, your situation known here, the truth of the matter is if the triplets are seniors and you're filing for them to all go to school, let's say that you'll now have four in college. If your family can afford to pay $20,000, let's say, which sounds horrible, you're like, we can't afford to pay that. But if the process shows that the Department of Ed form, FAFSA says you can afford to pay that, it's going to be divided by the number of students you have in college. So actually, believe it or not, that works to your advantage. So if your family can afford to pay $20,000, you can only afford $5,000 for each of the four students, which means you are going to actually get, if it was a little bit less than the number I just gave you, you would actually almost get Pell Grant, a small Pell Grant for each of those students, which is going to trigger lots of other state aid if they're going in state, some other federal aid and so forth. So it's not going to be quite as horrible as we mm-hmm. first reacted right here, because whatever
we were just trying to figure out how you have three teenagers
exactly.
of the same age at the same
exactly.
time. That was really that.
And also, we are on South Side. Riverside and on the Eastern Shore, but I'm be happy. You can look up our website and call our office or whatever. We would be happy to provide some information to you by phone, even though we're not in your child's school on the peninsula.
Dana, it's accesscollege.org if you want more information about that. And they'll be very, very glad to give you an assist on that. Are they all planning to, are they thinking about the same college or different ones or?
We have one at Virginia Tech right now, who's extremely happy, and we have two applying early admissions, Virginia Tech, and one who wants to go to William & Mary.
Okay. Well, you have an all-Virginia household, so
that's
congratulations.
Very good news, yes.
Yeah. And Dana, when my child was little, we told her that we were lucky to live in Virginia because all the colleges in the world were located right here, and people came from all over the world to come here.
It didn't work for long,
but there it is. Dana, thanks for the call, and good luck to you. 21 minutes past the hour, and Jane is on the line. She sounded remarkably calm, didn't she?
She did, yes.
The right person was given triplets and another one, that's for sure. Jane, you're on the line from Camden, North Carolina. Hi, Jane, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I am very excited about this because I think this is such an important subject, so thank you for taking the time to do this.
You're welcome.
My question is this. I have a high school senior, and the degree that she's choosing pretty much requires her to get a master's degree to be certified at a certain level.
Okay.
So my question is, her grandparents, particularly my mother when she passed away, left some money, which I then put it in an account for my daughter's education. Is there any way to kind of shelter that and say, you know, hey, this is money we want to use for graduate school? Because I know, already having one that's been through, it's harder to fund graduate school than it is to fund undergraduate because of the opportunities for financial aid. Is there any way to say, hey, you know, I've got this chunk of change, but, you know, I really need to use it for that graduate degree?
Well, just based on what you've said, and which are the only details that I know, that is going to be an asset, a parent's asset on the FAFSA form, and there's really no other way to, in your words, to shelter that. It does open up another area, which is not really applicable to you, but if I can go ahead and say this, on the 529 plans, if you have, so your mother has already passed away, you already have that money in your control, but if even a 529 plan, a college savings plan for a student, has to be claimed as an asset. But if the plan is owned by a grandparent as opposed to the parent, then that does not count against the student in financial aid. So that would be sort of a tip for other listeners to know that if the owner of a 529 or some other kind of college savings plan or account is in the name of someone other than the parent or the student, it does not count as an asset. Mm. In your case, it will that money will count even though you're wanting to hang on to it for grad school. It will need to count as an asset on the FAFSA form.
Jane, thank you for the call. So this is an interesting question that Jane brings up with regard to a little bit of inherited money. And there would be, I guess, two potential schools of thought on that. You hang on to it and, you know, get your loan, which you can certainly do for graduate school, or you spend that inheritance money on your graduate school. And I guess that's a question everybody has to answer.
It is. That's tough. And most of the families that Access is serving are not really in that situation.
Right.
About 80% of our students are low to moderate income and first generation. But we, of course, are a conduit of information in the schools and in the community. So we have that come up quite often.
Yeah.
That's really more of a personal decision. But I did think
it
was kind of interesting to bring up about the 529 plans.
Yes.
Because if a grandparent or an aunt or another family member, non-parent family member owns that plan, even though it's for that student, it does not count against
because
them
because it's owned
the
by
assets.
The other person.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, great point. 25 minutes. So think about that little strategy there. 25 minutes past the hour. We're talking about some big changes to the FAFSA process, which is the process, the doorway through which you will walk to get any sort of grant aid, any sort of gift aid, any sort of loans, work study, and the like for college. We're at big changes this year because the period to apply is open now, and the wisdom is sooner rather than later. Get it done. And you can also use past year tax returns. You don't have to wait.
Exactly. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
If you're filing for next year, you're using 2015 tax returns, and they're already done.
Right. Exactly so. Chrissy's on the line from Suffolk. Hi, Chrissy. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead.
All right. My question is, what steps do you have to take if the parents have gotten a divorce this year since you're using taxes based off the 2015 year?
Are you the student or are you the parent?
The student.
Okay. Stay on the line, Chrissy, will you? I'm sorry about that, by the way, because I know that complicates your life in more ways than one. Cheryl, what from a financial and aid perspective does Chrissy need to know?
Well, Chrissy, my first thoughts would be for you and your mom or your dad, whoever you are living with, as the custodian parent 50% of the time, you can go back into your 16-17 FAFSA, like right now, and you can update your FAFSA. And with that being said, with your parent that you are living with outside of your college.
Chrissy, are you first year, second year, third year? What are you?
Second year.
I'm sorry?
Second.
Okay. All right. So do you have, does your mother, your father, or either, who has custody for more than 50%?
My dad.
Okay.
My mom moved to a different state.
Okay. So with that being said, you and your dad, you can get your, what college are you located?
Where are you
Old
going
Dominion.
To school?
Old Dominion. Awesome. That's one of our college success schools. And we have a college success advisor named Rachel Weaver, and she can help you and your dad with this process. What you can do is you can go back into your FAFSA 16-17 year, and you can make the changes now. Okay? So once you make the changes, you wait about a week. And then we'll, then Ms. Weaver can go back in and she can file your 17-18 for this upcoming school year. And that will help in the process, because what happens is you don't want a lot of red tape, if you will, or any kind of, you want it to move smoothly. So to move smoothly, it would be best to go back in and make those changes now for your 16-17, and then file your 17-18 with just your dad's information on it. And that will be a smooth, and where it won't flag for any kind of verification from the colleges and so forth.
Chrissy, I know this is probably just a very, very difficult circumstance for you. And so I really want to make sure that we get you connected with the right person who's at Old Dominion, who can really walk you and your dad through this process, because, you know, you got enough on your plate right now. We can probably help take this one off. So who is the person she should be
Her
in touch with at Old Dominion?
Rachel Weaver, and she is our college success advisor. And
are they located in financial aid, or
we're located in this student success center? And okay. I'm sure we can reach out to Rachel if you haven't already to connect you.
So Chrissy, here's what I want you to do. That was fairly dictatorial, wasn't it? I apologize for that. Here's what I invite you to do, Chrissy. If you will stay on the line, we will get your contact information, and I will give that to Cheryl Jones and Bonnie Sutton with Access, and they can make sure that you get connected to her.
Absolutely.
Because it sounds like that just needs to happen.
Yep.
So that's just one thing you don't have to think about anymore. How does that sound?
That sounds awesome.
Okay. You hang on the line, and we'll get that information, and we'll be right back in touch. 29 minutes past the hour. That's Chrissy from Suffolk, who's a student at Old Dominion and had a question about a divorce situation. She knows all kinds of circumstances that change along the way.
Yes.
And so this is an important point to make, that if your financial circumstances changed, if your family circumstances changed, those are all triggers that you should be thinking to maybe go back in and check this out. And see, you may qualify for more, or you may qualify for less, but it's an important thing to know.
Any kind of change, even a change on your address that would be different from your tax return, is going to prevent the matching of IRS data and so forth for the new filing. So as Cheryl was saying, you should go back into the current form, which is called the 16-17 because it's for this current college year, and go back into the one that you're operating under right now. Make all those changes, then wait a week or two, then file the new form.
Got it.
Still trying to meet an early deadline. One other quick point is some of the colleges have moved their deadlines up. So if you're even thinking about Radford, or if you're a parent or student already in Radford, your new deadline this year to get state aid and aid for next year is December 1.
What?
Yes. So
wow,
you need to be thinking.
Up on people.
Yes, you need to be thinking about this is the window of opportunity and get it done as soon as possible.
Oh wow, that is a great. See, this is why you should listen to this show every day. You're going to get just great advice. Yeah, Radford comes up December 1st, and Virginia Tech not long after that,
right
on January 15th. So those are two that have that are earlier than you might expect. So good to know. Half past the hour, it's 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Certainly a lot of students are out there working hard in their own jobs, so they may be putting together some sort of combination of their own income and their parents' income. Anything we need to be aware of there?
No, it's just that their income does count as well. Often it's best to have a college work study job because that is removed from the income equation on the FAFSA form. In other words, it works to your advantage in the formula. But many students don't have that opportunity, and they're working jobs that are requiring more than that. A lot of our students are helping with family bills and so forth by working a lot. So the thing is just to make sure that you're counting everything that we must count, but that your parent is not counting things that they don't have to count, such as their retirement accounts and things that are related to retirement. You do not have to account that as an asset. So that's why Access, has the expertise right there on the high school campuses. We're also on 13 college campuses, and allow us to help you. We want to help you get that done correctly.
Do you have to have income? Do you have to have low to moderate income to be helped?
Not at all.
That's a great point.
Our FAFSA filing services are for everybody in this community. If we can't work it out in the school because you're already out or you're a non-traditional student, we have our program coordinator, Ashley, filing them in our office all the time, as well as other folks, Cheryl and others.
I'm going to tell you something. I just did another sort of application process, and when you get the opportunity to connect with people who file these things every single day, that is just worth its weight in gold, because they know what they're doing. And it will, the learning curve that you will have to get it done, again, finite period of time that you need to know that. So why are you going to waste all that time learning it when you got people who know what they're doing? Accesscollege.org. And again, a big reminder, you are filling out this form on behalf of the student. So even though parents, you may be thinking that, you're filling it out for yourself, the Social Security number that you put in there is for your student. 71% of young people need money to go to college, and that is a change over time, no question about it. But last year, over 1 million students left $2.7 billion in financial aid on the table by not completing that form. So it's really worth your while to complete it, and some big changes in here that this year that may make it easier for you to do so. Ryan's on the line from Portsmouth. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air.
Hi there. I used FAFSA a few years ago, maybe as much as 5. And I remember at that time, I was under 24. And when you were under 24, you had to use your parents' tax information. But if you were over 24, you could use your own. And my fiance is from the UK.
Yeah.
And under 24. Now, obviously, his parents have never paid taxes here. So how does he get around that, being under 24 but without parent tax information?
Well, we may not know all the details of that that whole situation, but there are opportunities for non-eligible citizens and for eligible non-citizens and so forth. So there are many different nuances there that we may not be able to discuss all right here.
And but if you do have that kind of situation where you have a foreign national engaged in this process,
they can still file, yes. And often the colleges, it depends on what college that your fiance is in, because often the colleges will have special aid that will be just for eligible non-citizens and so forth. And so they're not really qualifying for the federal aid for the FAFSA like you did, but they may be qualifying for other scholarship or merit aid.
Yeah.
And again, we'd be happy to talk to you at the office about that.
Great point. 25 minutes before the hour, 440-2666. 1-800-940-2240. Lots of folks with questions today. Stephanie's on the line from Williamsburg. Hi, Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for the great guest today. Will he speak to eligibility in terms of income and asset amount so I'm not absorbing anybody's time when it's just not even going to be, you know, feasible that any funds are received?
So are you asking, like, what is the max? So in other words, don't even think about applying if your income is over a certain amount. Is that what your question is?
If your income or your net worth is over a certain amount, just don't even apply. Let other students who need the funds apply.
Okay.
Well, I would say there certainly is a level there, but I would make it really high in your brain. I would say, oh, you know, seven-figure income or something like that, $1 million, because we tell everybody to file. The thing is that even merit scholarships, outside scholarships, academic scholarships at the college, they are all looking, a lot of things are called need blind, and then there are others that are looking at, well, what is the need? Others don't care. So I would say don't let that be a detriment. Don't let your income or assets, go ahead and file, and then let the process either say, okay, you didn't qualify, but it's definitely worth it for everyone to file.
I can, I'm aware of plenty of merit scholarships, which you think merit, okay, this is not related to income, where they ask for the FAFSA.
Exactly.
So at some level there, maybe it's initially merit, and then maybe when they drill down, they're making, you know, income-based decisions. Or maybe it's just a hoop, you know, maybe they just decide.
It's mostly that. They're just requiring that as one of the requirements. They want to know that you've gone through that process so that you've gotten everything you could get from those other sources before they make a determination about your scholarship.
Yeah, it's a great point. Okay, thank you for the call, Stephanie. I appreciate it. Let's go to David on the line from Hampton. Hi, David. You're on the air.
How you doing? My daughter is a first time getting ready to go to college out of everybody in my family. We visited University of Maryland.
Uh-huh.
We plan on visiting UVA, and she wants to go to Spelman. My question is this. Does she have to have all her SAT and ACT scores in prior to filing for FAFSA?
Oh.
She's an IB student at Hampton High School.
Okay.
She's also an honor student, and she takes some very difficult classes.
Sure.
And her grades are, and she's done all the volunteer work. Let me put it to you this way. She would make a perfect candidate for any college.
I would agree with you, David. If I were an admissions officer, I would say pass. You
exactly.
are in. No
Admit
question.
It.
No question. But David, this is a great question you're asking about sort of the academic requirements and how they relate to the financial aid requirements.
So I would say go ahead and file the financial aid form now. Hopefully your daughter has already signed up for either the SAT or ACT to take it very soon. As far as her applying to colleges, has she already applied to colleges?
I think David's gone. So I think what he was trying to figure out is, does she need those SAT, ACT scores into
FAFSA? Not for the FAFSA.
Not for the FAFSA.
If that's the FAFSA.
Yep.
Two separate processes, but related.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, David. Exactly. And I wish you well. I tell you, I remember that time. It is nervous making. And it seems like there is so much on the line. But here's what I want you to remember. I'm being very dictatorial today. I just said, here's what I want you to do again. And I don't mean that. I mean, here's what you might consider remembering. There are any number of fantastic colleges out there. And there is a fit for your child.
Absolutely.
And the idea is to find the right college for your child. And it may not be the one you have in your mind. And it may not be the one your child has in their mind. But the fact of the matter is, there are loads of colleges out there. And
Absolutely.
Loads of options.
A right academic fit and a right financial fit. And by playing all those options and exploring all these things and doing them in a timely way,
right.
It gives you the benefit of having a longer window to compare your options and make the best choice.
And have those financial conversations early rather than later. If there's a financial issue that restricts the number of colleges that you can apply for, everybody thinks you ought to be truthful and have that sooner rather than later, because that's just tough late in the game.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
Bonnie Sutton, thank you for being with
You're
us
welcome.
Today. Cheryl Jones, I'm always glad to see you. Thank you for being here,
glad
for doing
here.
Such a great job keeping all these counselors in all the schools and all the work that you're doing.
And just use your access advisor. If you're on the South Side, please, or in our Northampton County on the Eastern Shore, please look up our access advisors. We're willing and ready to help with any way, shape, or form.
AccessCollege.org is the website. A great resource regardless of your income situation, but particularly for low and moderate income families and families of first generation college students. So I hope this was helpful for you today. Bottom line, get that FAFSA in sooner rather than later. You know what we're going to do sooner rather than later? We're going to talk with Vice Admiral Ted Carter in just a moment. He's the superintendent of the United States Naval Academy. Do not line up at my door trying to get into that thing. He's just going to be on the phone. We'll be back in a moment. Getting very mellow in here, Victor. I sort of feel like I'm in a 1970s lounge or something. I'm kind of liking it. You know, it's good. We're 20 minutes before the hour and very glad to have with us today Vice Admiral Ted Carter. And he is the superintendent, the 62nd superintendent, in fact, of the U.S. Naval Academy. Admiral Carter, nice to have you with us today.
Very good to be on your show, Kathy.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you. We've been talking about how to get into college, and I will tell you that everybody who has an interest in getting into the Naval Academy is going to want to know from you what it takes to get that done. What are you looking for when you're looking for that next class of midshipmen?
Well, the first thing I would tell you, Kathy, is we're at a period in our nation's history where the millennial generation, this generation of young men and women who are, you know, finishing their high school years or even some that are in prep school or first year of college, they are very interested in service and want to come to the Naval Academy. I'm seeing applications from every voting district from across the country. In fact, we were the first service academy to have a nomination from every single voting district in the nation.
Wow.
Last year. And it's never happened before. 1802 with West Point, we just celebrated our 171st year. So extreme high interest in attending the Naval Academy. So what we're looking for is the top students who are the best all-around person. And what I mean by that is that we're looking for young people who have a desire to serve, understand that there's something bigger than themselves out there. Again, top students. When I say top students, we're not talking necessarily the valedictorian or the salutatorian of every class, but, you know, mostly A, some B's type students, above average SAT scores, athletes, well over 91% of our freshman class now are varsity athletes coming out of schools. Almost 70% of them are team captains. So we're looking for athletic scholars and those who have the potential for leadership. We see those that spend a lot of time in volunteerism. So we're looking for that person that is good at everything.
Yeah. It's very intriguing to me that what you just said about having applicants from all the districts across the country, because we know, and you know, because you've spent time here in Hampton Roads, that there are these sort of pockets of military concentration. And one of the things that is of great concern is that there are great portions of the country where, you know, they really don't have much military connection or military interaction, and it makes decisions about the future of the military very challenging from a political perspective. So it's really interesting to me that you've got that that connection and that interest from such a wide range of the country.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. We have seen the density of the Hampton Roads area, the talent that's there, the application numbers that come from that region are some of the highest in the country. In fact, the proportion of people to population is the highest from the Hampton Roads area up through the Northern Virginia corridor. And that is the first time we've seen that. It used to be in a lot of pockets in Maryland. Virginia has overtaken Maryland.
Wow, that's really interesting. We're at 17 minutes before the hour, and we're talking today with Vice Admiral Ted Carter, who is the superintendent of the Naval Academy. He's been there since 2014, and if you have questions for him, it can't be can you get my son or daughter in? I'm just going to say that right off the bat because he doesn't have that power.
I get those a lot, by the way.
I'm sure you do. You probably get stopped in the Safeway up there by people trying to ask you that question. But you certainly, if you have questions about the process or about eligibility, we'd certainly be glad to take them today. But sometimes we have tickets to give away, and today we are not giving away admission to the Naval Academy. That is not happening. But you can join us at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Admiral Carter, what is the obligation on the other side of an exceptional 4-year education, compliments of the United States of America? What is the obligation for that graduate?
So when you enter the Naval Academy as a freshman or a plebe, you can attend the first 2 years without consequence. In other words, you can voluntarily leave and owe nothing to the Naval Academy or to the government. Once you start the beginning of your junior year, now you're committed, and we call that 2 for 7, meaning you have 2 more years till you get to graduation and commissioning as an ensign in the Navy or a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps, and now you owe a minimum of 5-year service, active duty, and then that scales a little bit. For example, if you go into Naval Aviation, your active duty clock won't start until after you've earned your Wings of Gold. And there are some other programs where you may owe just a little bit more time, but nominally it's a 5-year commitment.
We're at 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Perhaps you're a graduate of the Naval Academy, and perhaps you have interest in attending. Those are the numbers to call to talk with Vice Admiral Ted Carter, who is the superintendent of the U.S. Naval Academy. I'm really intrigued by the service that you gave to the U.S. Naval War College. And when you were the president there, you established this Naval Leadership and Ethics Center in Newport. I'm really intrigued with the idea of ethics in the world at large, because it seems that in so many corners, we are challenged significantly from an ethical perspective. Just this morning, there is the conversation about Wells Fargo and the CEO, quote unquote, retiring at the end of that process that has been so ethically challenging for that company and from which it is trying to emerge. And so I wonder, as you think about ethics from a military perspective, what are the overlays you think might be applicable in the civilian world as well?
Well, I think every community, every profession, everywhere we are, whether it's in academia, whether it's in community service or military service, we're challenged with the questions of ethical behavior. The idea of creating this Naval Leadership and Ethics Center up in Newport was born from taking what was an existing schoolhouse for prospective commanding officers, executive officers, senior enlisted, and reminding us that these schoolhouses have the opportunity to remind us how important it is to be able to make sound ethical decisions. You know, as we have our accession sources, whether it be through boot camp for our sailors, ROTC units throughout the colleges that support ROTC for the Navy and the other services, our service academies, Naval Academy specifically, and even through Officer Candidate School, our young men and women get a great dose of how to make those right decisions. We have a very historical honor concept at the Naval Academy, as do a lot of other Ivy League schools and top-end educational institutions. But it's so easy to fall out of that as you go through your professional career. So we believe that at mid-course, mid-career, you need these reminders of, you know, what ethical behavior sounds like, looks like, so that you continue to shape your mind and eventually shape your actions by thinking about the types of decisions you're making.
That calling back is so important too, isn't it? Especially if you look at the long span of a career, you're right. I mean, it gets really easy to sort of to forget or just not to be quite as diligent on those ethical questions, which are so central to so much that happens. There's no question about that. So I understand that you all had a day off recently.
Yes. Well, we had a really big and very exciting weekend with our Naval Academy football team and, quite honestly, the entire brigade of midshipmen in a contest that was against almost any odds for us to achieve victory. You know, a lot of our starting players were injured early in the year, and this idea of next man, next woman up was on full stage. And the brigade of midshipmen and their spirit and energy carried the football team to a victory over number five ranked University of Houston. And it was such a unique moment in our Naval Academy history. I mean, 136 years of sports and Navy football at the Naval Academy. I made the decision that this was a teachable moment to never forget that our midshipmen can overcome adversity, be resilient, and win in the face of adversity. So it wasn't just trying to give them a day off or classes. There were many other activities that stopped on the Naval Academy grounds. We pulled the entire 4,400 member brigade of midshipmen together to have a conversation about that teachable moment. We kind of called it a pep rally, but it was really a serious conversation to remind the midshipmen what that day was about.
Yes.
You know, of course, a lot of them enjoyed the, you know, this this gift of time, and they used it wisely. But yes, it was something I don't want them to ever forget. They'll be talking about that 50 years from now.
Ah, that's fantastic. And you talked to them as well about this idea of overcoming physical and mental obstacles. And there's been a lot written about the generational ability to do that and how that changes over time. And I wonder, because you've worked with students now, you know, quite a lot over the course of your career. Do you notice generational differences there, or do you think perhaps we make too much of that?
I want to tell you, I am so optimistic for the future. What I see in the young men and women are at the Naval Academy, they have an enduring spirit. They want to serve. They only have 4 years to get ready. And I'm reminded today, our Navy's 241st birthday, that we are involved in operations in the Middle East. It's obviously been in the news. We had some naval vessels fired on from some rebels off the coast of Yemen a few days ago. And last night, some of our Navy destroyers were involved in missile attacks to take out some of those missile sites. And probably not a surprise to you or any of our listeners, we have Naval Academy graduates from the last class of just 2016 serving on those ships, actively involved in these operations. So, you know, when we talk to these young men and women about what it takes to be ready, it happens in real life, and it's right there.
It is a great point indeed. I tell you, you know, this you're so right. You're so right. And it's a constant reminder that we all have ways that we can serve. And certainly it's a really terrific thing to know that you've had interest in the Naval Academy from all across the country. Admiral Ted Carter, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Kathy. And happy birthday to our Navy, all our sailors, officers, chief petty officers, present, past, and certainly future.
Indeed. Thanks so much. By the way, they're going to be breaking ground at Annapolis on the 21st for the last academic building on campus, which will be named for Rear Admiral Grace Hopper. Admiral Hopper was an extraordinary woman, a leader in computer science. She is the one, and I don't think she originated this, but she is certainly credited with popularizing the phrase that sometimes it's better to ask forgiveness than permission. And some of us have built entire careers on that strategy. So well done, Admiral Hopper. Those groundbreaking ceremonies will be on October 21st, and it's a smart building, and again, named for Rear Admiral Grace Hopper. We now are so privileged to have our good friend Mal Vincent with us. He's remembering today Richmond-born film legend Shirley MacLaine.
The Virginia Film Festival made news this week with the announcement of the schedule for its 29th season, which will take place in Charlottesville from Thursday, November 4th to Sunday, November 6th. This festival has become a rite of autumn that draws filmmakers as well as fans to the Mountain Campus just at the time that the leaves are changing. This year features the homecoming of Academy Award winner Shirley MacLaine, who is a native of Richmond. On Friday evening, November the 4th, at the Paramount Theater in downtown Charlottesville, Shirley will sit down with the audience and talk about her career, as clips from some of her 100 movies will be shown. Well, let's just say that's the schedule. From past visits, Shirley has a checkered past when it comes to homecomings. Move in close, and I'll tell you about one of the most notorious examples of no shows in Norfolk theater history. The show did not go on. Shirley MacLaine was booked to star at Chrysler Hall for 6 nights. It was reportedly the first time she had performed in her home state since childhood, where she appeared mainly at dance schools. The title of her one-woman show was If You Could See Me Now, taken from one of the numbers in Sweet Charity.
If they could see me now, that little gang of mine, I'm eating fancy chow and drinking fancy wine. I'd like.
Well, the problem was you couldn't see her. On Tuesday, August the 13th, 1974, some 1,500 ticket buyers were gathered in front of Chrysler Hall, but there were no lights in the building. She reportedly had skipped town, leaving in top secrecy via a Piedmont flight to Newark. There's a story behind it. In an interview earlier in the week, she had asked me about the sound system in Chrysler Hall. I told her merely to check everything carefully because we had had trouble with sound. Yes, she did go on Monday night for the opening, but in the opening number, the microphone went dead. She broke down on stage. I never saw anything quite like this on a stage before or since. She brought the curtain down. Backstage, she reportedly threw a microphone, barely missing a stagehand. She screamed, "My good friend Mal Vincent told me the sound in this place was lousy. I should have listened to him." Oops. That wasn't exactly what I told her, and actually I'd only talked to her once on the telephone in my life. To give her credit, she tried. She tried to continue the show, but the microphone kept cutting off. It was close to midnight when we finally got through the show. The next day, making no announcement, she walked. The Associated Press picked up the story, and it went nationwide, giving terrible publicity to Chrysler Hall and to Norfolk. The mayor called me and suggested it was all my fault because I'd set her up. But no, I was in the clear. I had just warned her to check the sound. In any case, there were legal involvements. Shirley settled out of court, and Pearl Bailey came in to replace her for the remainder of the run. Pearl claimed she didn't need a microphone. Shirley remains a talent who went from Pixie, then mother of the Rat Pack, character actress, Academy Award nominations, and a win for Terms of Endearment. There is no question that she deserves a tribute. And don't forget, she's still working. She scored again with a memorable role in Downton Abbey. For this homecoming, though, we just hope she stays home a bit longer.
What a build of holy cow! They'd never believe it if my friends could see me.
And, of course, Shirley MacLaine is a very famous brother, actor Warren Beatty. Thank you, Mal Vincent. Appreciate it very much. Want to let you know about a couple of things that are coming up that you probably will want to be aware of. If you're looking for a job, the City of Norfolk's Workforce Development Center is having a job fair on Thursday, the 20th of October. You want to bring your resumes, and they say please dress professionally. That should be fairly obvious. They're going to have more than 50 employers there Thursday, October 20th at the Workforce Development Center on East Little Creek Road in Norfolk from 10 to 1. So that is coming up for you. As well, just want to let you know there's going to be a great series on Masterpiece coming up on WHRO TV 15 beginning this Sunday. It's called The Durrells in Corfu. Looks fantastic. It's a story about an intrepid widow who decamps from dreary England, and you know how we love those, right? To a sun-dappled Greek island with her four recalcitrant children who are between the ages of 11 and 21. So hilarity and perhaps tension will ensue, one wonders. So that's beginning Sunday night on WHRO TV 15, continuing through the 20th of November. And then on the 27th or after that, you can have your own recalcitrant children in your home for Thanksgiving. So that could happen too. Up next here on 89.5, it's Reveal. The program today is about voting rights and wrongs. This presidential season, the first since the Supreme Court gutted historic voter rights protection, and Reveal is looking at the impact of state laws that have rushed in to fill the void. Are they fighting fraud or changing election outcomes? It's coming up next right here on Reveal. And tonight at 8 on This Old House, wait for it, a steel beam is installed, an oil tank is removed, and digging for the new foundation begins. I may have to take my blood pressure medicine to deal with the excitement that's coming up tonight at 8 on This Old House. Thanks for listening. We'll see you right back here tomorrow.